This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, what's up, everybody? This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. Once again, at the last minute, I had a guy back out on me. He had a sick, another person with a sick kid, so it must be going around. I'm not sure what's going on, but I'm hoping to get him on next week. With that said, I had some space that I wanted to fill. I wanted to get out an episode here. It's going to be a short episode today, and here's what I did. I went to AI and I said, AI, my name's Dan. I am the host of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and I would like some topics to discuss about the hunting and outdoor space, any type of current events or cool things that would be worth talking about. Let me know a list and then let me know some information, and I would love to get it rocking and rolling here and have a good conversation for my podcast. So AI spit out a couple things. A couple things are actually pretty interesting that I want to talk about. And that's about it. And then we're going to shut her down and then we're going to go about our lives. So this podcast would be like drive to work, drive back home, and it's done type of deal, depending on how far away you live. So first off, I want to say, if you enjoy the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, do me a favor, go to Spotify, iTunes, wherever you download, leave a 5-star review, and leave a comment, dude. Let everybody know that I'm the coolest person that you know, and that, yeah, that's it. I'm the coolest person you know. Outside of that, the Nine Finger Chronicles now also has a YouTube channel. If you want to listen or watch on YouTube, go to the Nine Finger Chronicles YouTube page and subscribe, leave comments there as well. All right. Before we get into what I want to talk about today, I want to send a huge shout out to Wasp Archery. I do have a discount code for them, NFC20. It's turkey season coming up, and Vortex Optics offers red dots for your shotgun. Go check out Vortex Optics red dots, vortexoptics.com. Code Blue Scents, variety of real and synthetic deer urine, scent elimination products, the Rope-A-Dope Mox Grape Kit. Go check out codebluescents.com, discount code NFC for 20% off. Reveal Trail Cameras. Those guys are doing some really amazing things with their technology, their cameras, and their platform. Go check out tacticam.com/cameras or go download the app anywhere you can download apps. So Google Play Store, so forth and so on. And then my company, Full Sneak Gear, if you want a crazy t-shirt with a deer on it or a turkey on it that says this dude hunts, go check it out. All right. So I go to AI and I'm talking with AI and they pop up some talking points for today's episode. And the first thing that I wanted to talk about today is this report that came out from the 2026 outdoor, it's called the 2026 Outdoor Economy Report. And the data that they are showing here covers hunting, shooting, and trapping. Now, the outdoor economy also includes bicycling, is one category, I believe. Let me go down here where they have it broken up. Bicycling is one category. Climbing, hiking, and camping is another category. And then hunting, shooting, and trapping is another category. Now, overall, those three add up to a 2.7% increase. And the term they use here is year over year. So you add up the entire outdoor economic numbers from 2024 to 2026, so that 2-year period, you're looking at a outdoor economy that has increased 2.7% and has a total gross output of $1.3 trillion, which is huge. Now, just in the hunting, shooting, and trapping place, I'm going to, you know, obviously this is a hunting show, so this might be a little tease here and an easy answer, but out of bicycling, the one category of bicycling, another category of climbing, hiking, camping, and then hunting, shooting, trapping, where did we see the biggest percent increase? It's obvious because this is a hunting podcast. Bicycling had an increase of 4. Climbing, hiking, and camping, which I'm almost positive there are more people who climb, hike, and camp than there are hunters in North America. Now, I don't know if these numbers are necessarily, you know, like if these people are hunters, there's probably some crossover there, but I just assume in North America, especially, there's more people who enjoy the outdoors but do not hunt. 6.5% increase in that's roughly $6.2 billion. All right. And then the hunting, shooting, and trapping has increased year over year by 16.5%. And that equates to $16.5 billion. So that's crazy. That's a total value added. So that's an additional $16.5 billion over the last 2 years to hunting, shooting, and trapping. Now, shooting can be like shooting sports, tactical type stuff, hunting products, and the hunting industry is also in there. And the question that AI thought I should discuss is, are we making more hunters through the R3 program, or is hunting becoming more expensive and we're just continuing to pay those prices? And so then I asked the question, I'm like, okay, if that's the case, let's look at tag sales for certain states. Okay. And again, everything seems to be kind of the same, right? They said in Wisconsin, there's been a slight decline, but the gun only license are the main drag, the main selling point in the state of Wisconsin, while other types of hunting like archery and crossbows are right around the same. But it says there's a slight decline in, this is 2025 to 2026 data. Right? So holding steady in Pennsylvania, and then it threw a fact out here. Pennsylvania actually has one of the most affordable hunting license per state. And it looks to me like, according to this, it's $20.97 for a resident to have a hunting license in that state. And then it follows up by saying participation is high, but revenue per hunter is lower than Western states. Now, one thing that I live in Iowa, and I'm like, okay, let's look a little bit in Iowa, and it's mixed. Residents, and this is where I've talked about this 100 times. Residents' annual license rose by 2,400, but a combo license, which would be your hunting, your fishing, your habitat stamp, all of that is in one combo license. And it's for, you know, the entire season. There was a $3,000 or a 3,000 person or a drop, like the combo license dropped by 3,000. So that's a net loss of 500. However, non-resident interest, which they didn't share the number here, is at an all-time high. And here's what I'm guessing. And this is just me coming from a point of, I'm an Iowa resident. I live here. I get to see. My guess is access is becoming a problem. It is harder for residents to try to find places to hunt without leasing or owning land. Non-residents are coming in at an all-time high, and leasing, buying preference points, trying to get in the door so that they can hunt Iowa's whitetail herd, which is basically the really good stuff is south of Interstate 80. So the state of Iowa is cut in half. And then you have on each side of the state, a sliver that runs along the Mississippi and along the Missouri. That's fairly good. And yes, there's other decent spots, but for the most part, that's where everybody wants to hunt. And when I look at that and I go, man, we're seeing a slight decline in resident hunting, and non-residents are waiting in line to come in here, which tells me residents are having a harder time finding access in this state, which kind of sucks. And so I feel like that's kind of what was going on with Wyoming, where the residents started feeling the pinch and pressure of non-residents coming in, hunting their public land, leasing up the private, everything's outfitted now. But I mean, it's been that way for a while. And so I'm very interested in diving further into this, trying to look for information of non-resident versus resident licenses year over year and seeing if there is more non-residents coming into Iowa or other states, right? And so I think what this is actually saying is the hardcore guys are still continuing to hunt. The hardcore guys are paying the most money into the industry, paying the most money to travel. And your one-offs, your guys who are only hunting maybe the shotgun season or the rifle season, like for example, in Wisconsin, there was 80,000 gun licenses sold. I think that's what this means. It's a total deer hunting privileges down 0.12%. So it looks like hunting licenses in Wisconsin totaled 790,444. And so that's, that number. And so the question kind of pops up is what is going on in as far as the hunting community versus the hunting economy? And they bring up the R3, right? The R3 movement. And if that means that, you know, the field to fork programs, but it's like the field to fork programs, the late onset hunters, all of those guys, are there more of them coming in and they're starting to spend the money, or have the products become more expensive for the regular hunters, the not new hunters? And I think it's probably a little bit of both. But my guess is everything is becoming more expensive. I mean, even 3 or 4 years ago, a flagship bow from the highest, the biggest, most popular companies were not $2,000. You're knocking on, what, $1,000 to $1,200, and now you're looking at $2,000 for a bow if you want to get a bow. It also says here that there has been a big increase this is under somebody called a lifestyle hunter. This is where you can get, the 16.5% growth in economic output doesn't mean always a 16.5% growth in hunters in the woods. They call this gear escalation. And they're saying there is a more of a buy once, cry once mentality, which means that hunters are trading in their $600 rifles for a $2,500 custom setup, or maybe a lower brand of boot for a $600 boot. So hunters this AI, maybe it's accurate, maybe it's not, but I can understand this. People are trying to buy the best possible gear, which costs money, and it's going to inflate the industry for a short period of time. But then because the products last longer and are higher quality, then the numbers will tend to go down after a spike like this. This summer, America turns 250 years old, and there's no better way to celebrate than getting outside and exploring this great nation. One way to do that is to rent a camper or RV from Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone over 21 to rent an RV or camper without owning one. With Outdoorsy, you can drive it yourself, tow it, or even have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. With comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance, Outdoorsy gives you the peace of mind you need when on the road. Outdoorsy is even the perfect option for your next out-of-state hunting or fishing trip. Right now, my listeners can have all service fees removed from their bookings in 2026 with code NFC at Outdoorsy.com. That's Outdoorsy.com, and use code NFC at checkout to remove your service fees. Summer is officially here, and you know what that means? long late nights by the grill, weekends at the lake, and hitting the golf course with your buddies. And nothing elevates those perfect summer moments quite like a premium cigar. Whether you're pairing a rich Murado with a cold bourbon after a backyard barbecue or enjoying a smooth smoke on the porch at sunset, Thompson Cigar has you covered. They've been America's humidor since 1915, offering the absolute best selection and prices. Because they have one of the largest humidors in the country, your cigars are guaranteed fresh and delivered straight to your door. If you want to try something new, check out their unique 5-pack fever deals or their value clubs for unbeatable savings and expert curation. Use my code NFC at checkout for up to 20% off your orders of $75 or more. Or visit thompsoncigar.com/NFC and the discount will be automatically applied. Some exclusions may apply. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies, and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back. Literally. Head to trollco.com/chronicles and use NFC25 for 25% off your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. And so everybody I talk to is spending a ton of money on good gear these days. And I get it, man. I get it. I want to be in the buy once, cry once category too. But, you know, $600 for a pair of boots, man, that's pretty steep. But boots are important if hunting and hiking in the outdoors is what you love to do, especially if you're going out west into the mountains or the backcountry or things like that. Then it says something along the lines of the Instagram effect. Okay. And hunting has become a high-end lifestyle brand. We are seeing growth in, are we seeing growth in actual woodsmanship skills or just growth in people who want to look like they're, or just growth in people who want to look like they're in Sitka or Kuyu catalog? And that, I didn't write that, AI did. So don't get mad at me. And that's crazy. There is a little bit of that going on where people just want to look good in camo and they go just to post the pictures and just, they don't necessarily know shit about hunting and all they want to do is look cool doing it, right? They want to shoot their buck and or their doe and they want to look good in whatever it is they do. They want to throw their hashtags on there. And I mean, good for them. They're participating in the sport. According to this, it just means like, I don't know, people aren't necessarily hardcore. They just want to have the appearance of being a hardcore hunter. So that's a very interesting take, something that we should all think of. The next little bullet point here is called the inventory hunter. And that means that people are spending more on cellular trail cameras and subscription apps like Onyx and HuntStand than ever before. This is shooting and hunting spending, but it's digital first. So they're seeing a large amount of that $16.5 million. Was it million or billion? 16.5. Yeah. $16.5 million increase on technology, basically. So you're starting to see a lot of money going to the places that make hunting easier, like crossbows. Like it says here, crossbows, digital cellular trail cameras. What else? Like the more expensive, like the apps, the prescription or subscription model, hunting products, and things like that. So that's a very interesting. I wish I could find actual numbers on something like that. And then the next thing here is the BEA, and I think that's the BEA reported, I think that's the Business Economic Association reported, highlighting that hunting/shooting was the number one conventional activity in states like Arizona and Wyoming. but also saw massive contributions from Texas. Texas alone is a $2 billion outdoor industry in Florida, which surprises me because Florida, and there might be some fishing involved in Florida, which is $974 million. I wonder how that's difference, because Texas is obviously a private land powerhouse, right? They are all private. They have their hunt clubs. They have high fence. They have the exotics, all of that stuff. And Wyoming mentioned and Arizona mentioned have a ton of public land to go hunt. So there's more of a backcountry, what's the word I'm looking for? Allure, I guess you could say, about hunting in the West. And my guess is that, well, it's not a guess. If you're talking about a state like Wyoming, Wyoming is a heavily funded by non-residents. And so they have to be very careful how they balance their residents versus non-residents tag allocations, knowing that non-residents are in the driver's seat for the amount of money that comes in on tag sales, preference point purchases, a lot of economic stimulus from coming in, getting hotel rooms, buying gas and snacks and groceries and all of the stuff you need when traveling. Like I stopped when I was in Idaho and I had, you know, all my stuff got wet. We had to come off the mountain and I ended up going to a laundromat. And the only people in the laundromat were other hunters that were in there doing the exact same thing I was doing. So that's an interesting thing to think about as well. What's the next one here? Then I started asking about the states and the other thing is they're calling this the crossbow pivot. Okay. In 2025, the crossbow report, and I don't know what that is, shows that 78% of crossbow users hunted in the 24-25 season. 78% of crossbow hunters. So I don't know, like, if you're a hunter in that time frame and you used a crossbow, I wonder if it's 78% of bow hunters or archery hunters were that. I'm not sure. The point, crossbows are a massive retention tool for R3. I agree with that. And they are keeping the older generation in the woods longer, spending money and making it easier for adult onset hunters to get a win early. And then, so the question they offer is this cheating or is this the only thing keeping the industry's lights on? It's a great question. Absolutely huge. Talking to my buddy Byron Horton out of Ohio, and he was telling me about some of the statistics coming out of Ohio of what weapon was chosen the most, and far and away it was crossbows during the archery season. And that's what you filled your tag. That's what hunters are filling their tags with. So that you open that up, people are choosing crossbows, which, you know, if there's a rule and regulation change that allows crossbows, people are going to hit the easy button and they're going to go to crossbows, thus stimulating the economy, right? And I don't know. I had a conversation. I was actually on yesterday I drove to Illinois and I was on the Working Class Bowhunter podcast. I was a guest there and that's coming out. Here pretty soon. I don't know. It's crazy that, like, especially in Iowa, there's a huge push to get crossbows legalized in the state. Meanwhile, it's not the hunters of the state wishing or trying to get this. It is 100% lobbyists and politicians trying to get this passed. 100%. Bow hunters, the Iowa Bow Hunters Association, all the other hunters in the state, nobody wants this. And so it's just crazy how, you know, they have lobbyists. The crossbow community, the industry has lobbyists that are in state trying to get laws passed to introduce crossbows into the archery season for one reason only, and that is revenue, to get revenue. And so there's that. So there's a little bit of that. I don't know where we're going here on all of this. The non-resident cash flow, obviously. Here's one point. The non-resident cash flow. States like Iowa and Utah are seeing a shift. They are leaning on non-residents to balance the books. Very interesting. right? Just like Wyoming. The point, non-resident hunting licenses are becoming a luxury good. In Iowa, non-resident fishing and hunting gains were noticeable in 2025. At what point does the cost of a dream hunt tag become a barrier that R3 can't fix? Let me read that out loud and let me see if I can answer it. At what point does the cost of a dream hunt tag become a barrier that R3 can't fix? Well, I look at this as, if you're talking about a luxury item or a dream hunt, if you're traveling to Iowa and you're putting in preference points for X number of years, there's not a R3 barrier there. In my opinion, you're going there for a reason. You have experience in Iowa, or you have experience hunting, and you want to experience, you're doing it for the experience. This isn't necessarily an access issue, because I'm assuming that, and this is again my take, that if guys are coming from Wisconsin, Michigan, New York, Pennsylvania, the South, wherever, and then coming to Iowa to try to hunt, they have whitetail deer that they could hunt in their state. So to me, this is less R3. More, I want to shoot a big buck. I want to experience the rut. So it's not a retention thing at all, it's not R3. It's something different. It's like wanting to come experience the best hunting that's available, right? They want big antlers and the dream of having a big antler. So is it a dream hunt? Yes. Is it R3? My opinion, no. Recently, in 2025, research from the Council to Advance Hunting shows a steady decline in public approval for legal hunting, down from 81% high in 81% of the people who were polled in 2021, then it doesn't give the new number, but it's down from 81%. 81% of the people who were polled in 2021 approved hunting, right? It looks like that is slowly declining. We have more money than ever coming into the industry, but less public support. So I think what's happening, and we've talked about this 100 times, the trophy hunting aspect of it. We are all focused on the big antlers, the old bucks, like going and posting all of that on social media. Is there an impact on that? I believe there is. We have more money than ever, but less public support. This is dangerous. This is a dangerous combination. If the 16.5% growth is tied to lifestyle and trophy hunting, which the public tends to dislike, we might be spending our way into a PR crisis. Lifestyle and trophy hunting. Lifestyle hunters, they're saying, are the Instagrammers, the people who go and try to look good and kill animals and show the antlers. And trophy hunting is obviously exactly what it says it is, going and looking for big bucks. And that's the only reason that they're hunt. And the perception to the public is those two things are bad. But there's no mention in here about killing animals for food. And I think that is where the public has a huge acceptance rate, or the public approval. If you tell someone, hey, I want to go hunt for antlers, they're going to say, I don't like that. But if you tell them I'm going to go hunt and fill my freezer, you can do both. But I think it's a little bit about the messaging, which I think that's why they're saying it's a potential PR crisis. Because if you say, I want big bucks, I only chase big bucks, I want to shoot big bucks, people are going, okay, well, you're just shooting that animal for its antlers? When the answer could be yes. We're also, the main reason this buck got shot was because he had big antlers. The secondary reason is because he's got a ton of meat, and I'm going to turn that meat into sausage and ground and steaks, and I'm going to eat it throughout the course of the year, which people would approve. So I think it's almost like, dude, I shot this 5 or 6 year old 170-inch buck, and he's going to fill my freezer, dude. He's a bigger body deer. He's going to fill my freezer, which is great. It's not like it's a politician's approach, right? We're not here to lie by saying, dude, I shot this buck because he was a 5-year-old 170-incher. We just say the other thing first. We just say, I'm a meat hunter. Like,
I shot this giant buck, and with this giant buck, I'm going to fill the freezer. Therefore, the public accepts this, and we as the hunting community get a gawk at the giant antlers. PR crisis averted, I think. I don't know. But still, 81% in 21, that's pretty good. I don't see the new number here, but I love the fact that it's not at an all-time low. It says it's steady decline. And I think the decline comes with the douchebags of the world. And I have my own personal opinions on this, of what you post, how you post, what you say. Like, there are people out there that they are just trying to gain attention, and they're okay with bringing controversy into the space to get the likes and the clicks and all the other analytics that go along with it. Meanwhile, jeopardizing that approval rate. They're okay with that. My personal opinion is, I feel if you shoot a deer, you should absolutely post that on social media. And, you know, obviously you don't want to be riding it. You don't want to be hitting a turkey or a crane or a wounded goose with a baseball bat and killing it that way. That's horrible. That leaves a bad taste in the mouth for that public approval. But there is a way out there that you can make hunting extremely tasteful and accomplish your goals through hunting big giant antlers, talking about the meat, the strategy, and all that stuff. I think there's definitely a way to do both. And I want to explore that in future episodes. So if you're listening to this and you have a take on that, let's talk about it. And then we're in a weird spot. We've just got a record-breaking, you know, this is record-breaking money that is coming into the space. But it says here, we are losing the average Joe hunter, which I 100% agree with. We're in a weird spot. We've got record-breaking money coming in, but we're losing the average Joes in states like Wisconsin. If we can continue to see double-digit economy growth while participation stays flat, we aren't a community anymore. We're an industry that is much easier for the public to shut down than a tradition, right? And so that is a great point by AI. I didn't come up with that quote. And they might have pulled that quote from somebody else, but I'm not sure who. But that's the truth, man. If people see a dollar sign associated with a natural resource, especially if you're a non-participant, it can look like that's you're hunting cows and posting it or making it a commodity and less of a natural resource. Therefore, when you put the dollar sign on a big buck, people look at it as money equals industry and less as the community and the tradition that got us this far, right? The tradition of hunting got us to the point that we're in. And I feel like, yes, you're still having a tradition, but you're slowly whoring it out to the highest bidder. And then at some point, it doesn't even become tradition anymore. The only tradition is I'm spending a lot of money to go hunt whitetails, where it's going to eventually become a rich man sport. And so there's that. I'm going to look here for, let's see here, spending exponentially more $1,000 saddles. Yeah. Yeah. The only other point here is that hunters are spending exponentially now, more than $1,000 on a saddle, $2,000 on thermal optics, and high-end land leases. And so what this is doing is, the way I'm kind of picking up on this discussion is, hunters are spending more now because they, you know, it's so expensive. They have to. If they want to continue to participate in hunting, they have to spend more money on leases because access is going away. You're going to have to hunt public if you want new gear. You know, you're going to, even used gear these days is more expensive than what it used to be. So even if you want to go out and buy more money, you know, spend more money on products, whether they're the cry once, buy once, or you're just getting into it and you need a whole bunch of new stuff, but there's going to be a breaking point for people at some point as it becomes more expensive to hunt and access is limited. And I'm not saying it's limited everywhere. And I believe if you really want to do something, you can go out and make it happen. I get that. But I think also in the world we live in, the tradition of hunting still comes second, because you have to have a life, or you have to have the rest of your life before you get to go, like, you have to have a job if you want to spend money on hunting leases and hunting products and things like that. So it just, at some point there will be a breaking point, and hunters will not continue to hunt because either the barrier of entry is so expensive, or hunting every year becomes so expensive, it no longer is an affordable hobby for people. And yes, there are people out there who are going to do it no matter what, because they have the means, they have the incomes, they don't have kids in club wrestling and club baseball like I do, and they're going to spend the money because that's what they want to do, and that's the only thing they have to do. But at the same time, my guess is a lot more people out there who don't. And then that's when you start to see an exit from people in the hunting space. So it's awesome that there's a lot of options out there for people right now, but it seems like every single year, a lot of options, just those options get a little smaller and a little smaller and a little smaller. And the barrier of entry to get into a farm or get into hunting gets more expensive and more expensive and more expensive. And at some point, the gap's going to be too wide there. And so I'm interested in digging into some of this information a little bit more and trying to figure out if there's any trends or we're seeing anything change that's going to affect either the community or the industry. So there's that. I've said a lot today, and I apologize. So that's my AI podcast for the day. Do me a favor, go to iTunes or Spotify. Leave a 5-star review on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I would really appreciate that. Go to YouTube and subscribe. Please subscribe to the Nine Finger Chronicles YouTube page, the Sportsman's Empire YouTube page, and there's all the other ones there as well. All right, good vibes, everybody. Have a good rest of your day, and we will talk to you later.